In the name of one God, creator, redeemer, and sustainer of our lives, amen. I did not understand about pigs until I had lived in Africa for a number of years. I didn't understand about many domestic animals because I spent most of my life living in cities and urban environments. And so it wasn't until I lived in Liberia for about 2 years and then Benin for about 3 years that I began to understand about sheep and goats, where everybody kept sheep and goats and chickens and pigs, right? And sheep and goats and chickens are, cute and adorable and sometimes annoying and smelly, but, you know, I mean, but they're not like pigs. Pigs are intelligent. Pigs taste good. There is nothing like bacon, right? But pigs are disgusting creatures. They will eat anything. When you see them just running rogue in a village and they're digging through trash piles, they're coming across carcasses of dead animals and they're gnawing on rotting carcasses of dead animals, they will go through the excrement of other animals to pick out the little bits of food that are yet undigested. I love it. The reaction on your faces. Yes. You're feeling that sense of disgust. You should feel that sense of disgust because this is what most people in the world have always felt about pigs. They felt a sense of disgust, right? Which is why Jews don't eat pigs, which is why Muslims don't eat pigs. They are considered unclean, right? Because they're gross, but they taste so good. You know, when I was in Peace Corps, a friend of mine was, one of my fellow volunteers was Jewish, and I mean, she would go on about how disgusting pigs were, but she couldn't help herself from eating pork because it actually, for whatever reason, despite the nasty diet, it tasted really good. And Christians are able to do that because, you know, at one point in our history, Peter had this dream, you know, early on after Jesus's resurrection and ascension, Peter has this dream where God lowers this sheet, and there's a pig, and there's a lobster, and, you know, there's a snake, and there's a camel, and God says, eat. And Peter's like, no. And God says, eat. And Peter's like, no, you told me I shouldn't eat these things, right? They're unclean, they're gross, they're disgusting. And God says, eat. Do not declare unclean what I have declared clean, or do not consider unclean what I have declared clean. And ever since then, we've been able to eat bacon. Right? That's true. You're all complicit, or most of you are complicit, I can tell. So I did not understand about pigs, right? In this story about the prodigal son, you have this young man who basically asks his father for his inheritance while his father is still alive. Right? So he disrespects his father by claiming the inheritance and then leaving the house, and he goes off to a foreign country where he lives a dissolute life, which is what the text says. And we don't know what that meant. What is a dissolute life? His older brother thinks he spent it with wine, women, and song, you know, which is just probably a good explanation of what happened. But he's just living in a sense of dissolution. And the story says he came to a point where, you know, after a famine, he hired himself out to a Gentile, a foreigner, to work with pigs. And he found himself so hungry and empty that he would eat what the pigs were eating. And you're meant, if you're a Jewish hearer of this story, if you're a Muslim hearer of this story, you realize, oh, he is gone really low. Right? He's as low as you can possibly imaginably get. Right? And then the text says he comes to himself. He'd been disconnected from himself in some way. He'd been kind of, you know, lost in some way and lost to himself. And then in the midst of this, he comes to himself. He recovers a sense of who he is, of who he's meant to be, of what his own potential is, of where he's been. He's not in a fog, in a fugue anymore. He comes to himself. And he realizes, and he thinks about his father's house and the goodness of his father's house. And he realizes, I am not worthy to be called my father's son. He comes to himself and he feels marred. He comes to himself and he feels like who he is has been somehow torqued and twisted and distorted and broken. And he says, I'm not worthy. I don't feel like I have a right anymore to be in my Father's house. Something has damaged me in a way that I don't have the rights of a son anymore. But I know there's goodness there. And at least I won't be starving. And so I'll go to my Father's house and I'll ask to be a servant in the house, even though I'm not worthy. Right? It's a familiar story. So he goes, he's walking down the road. His father sees him from a distance and comes running to him and embraces him. And it's that moment, right, where all of a sudden, and this is a story about grace, right, this amazing moment of grace that reaches out. And yet what does he do in that moment? Like he's not like, oh, okay, everything's fine. Good. Now I'm glad to be home. Good to see you, Dad. No, he says, Dad, I'm not worthy to be your son anymore. I feel bad about myself and I feel bad about what I've done and I really feel like I'm not worthy. And his dad doesn't even address it. His dad's like, oh no, go kill the fat calf. We're going to have a party. Right? And the story doesn't tell us about how he came to a place where he felt worthy. You know, it goes on to talk about the older brother, which is a great story in and of its own right and is worthy of another sermon in its own right. And I'm not going to preach about the older brother today. I'll promise I'll do it another time. I promise. Because in many ways, a lot of us, I mean, we've got a little bit of the younger brother in us and we've got a little bit of the older brother in us, right? And we need to talk about both. And we've got a little bit of the father in us too. We need to talk about all of the above. But it's that moment where the younger son is in the midst of the father's embrace and he doesn't feel like he can take it in. His sense is, this isn't me. You got the wrong guy. I used to be that guy, but I'm not that guy anymore. I'm not worthy of your love. I'm not worthy of this grace. It's a very human experience. And it points to the difficulty of taking in unconditional love. It points to the difficulty of taking in unmerited grace that may be real. And the father doesn't even ask, what have you done? The father doesn't even ask where you've been. Father's like, I am so glad to have you home. But he knows what he's done, and he knows where he's been. And he's feeling the weight of it. And he needs to let it out. This is why in our spiritual practices, we do things that help us kind of get rid of that sense of unworthiness as a way of stepping into grace and being able to receive grace. People who have gone through 12-step programs, right, who've been in a cycle of addiction and have lost themselves, right, in an addictive cycle and have done things that they're ashamed of, have done things that have made them feel not worthy, have done things that have felt like it has marred their soul. Part of the reason why you go through these 12 steps is the process of the 12 steps begins to name what those things are, begins to say, hey, this is what I've done. And it allows the individual to go and talk to the person who they've harmed or rectify in some way the things they've done. So that sense of shame, that sense of not being worthy, actually you do esteemable acts and do amends as a way of restoring your sense of self and restoring your dignity. That's part of what the 12 steps are all about. It's a spiritual process of being able to restore that sense that you are loved, that you are valuable. Right, we do the same thing. I mean, in the whole tradition of confession is a similar sort of process. Confession and penance in the church. It's the ability to kind of say to somebody, like, okay, this, I feel really bad about myself. I feel really bad about something I've done. I actually feel a sense of shame, or I feel a sense of not being worthy, and I can't move on until I let it go. But I actually have to talk to somebody about it, right? And so you go to somebody who can hear that, And you, this confession, so in the face of somebody who can hear and see you and see what's happened and hear it in its full detail and hear the sense of remorse and say, you are forgiven. You are loved by God. That's what confession is it's the way of clearing out that space of not feeling worthy so that you can experience the grace of God. God doesn't need you to do that. God doesn't need you to confess your sins. We need to do it. We also do it in these practices of washing, right? The waters of baptism that wash us and cleanse us, and the sense of, no, what the sense of being unworthy or not being acceptable to God. No, actually, that gets washed away. So there is grace. You know, this sacrament of Eucharist, there's the sense of, no, actually, who come as you are, come wherever you've been, and come and eat and be restored. Another spiritual practice in the church that has been a symbolic, right, of this spiritual journey, of this washing and cleansing, of this taking away of the shame and the sense of discomfort and the shame and disgust has been foot washing, right? There are lots of churches that have practiced foot washing. And that's part of the reason why they do it. In the story, Jesus at the Last Supper is down there washing his disciples' feet, and he's going around the room, and Peter's discomfort is growing and growing. He's like, no, you shall never, ever wash my feet. I don't want you to wash my feet. I am so profoundly uncomfortable with you washing my feet. And Jesus says to him, unless I wash you, you don't have a part of me. Unless I wash you, you don't get it. You don't understand it. We're going to have an opportunity to practice the spiritual practice of foot washing on Monday, Thursday, right? Our archbishop will be here. She will be coming here to lead us in a foot washing on Monday, Thursday, and to step in. And it's an invitation to step into our discomfort. It's an invitation to step into that there's something dirty and shameful about ourselves, our feet, right? In a very literal way. People are so profoundly uncomfortable about their feet. And the archbishop is like, no, you are loved by God. And your feet are loved by God. The invitation is to experience that. And hold that with each other. Like it's a profound act, right? Foot washing is actually this really profound spiritual act of stepping into grace, of stepping into letting go of our discomfort and our shame, and being invited to be more fully just who we are as human beings in this world. And if you really don't want your foot washed, please still come to Monday, Thursday. It's not obligatory, right? There's an invitation. There's lots of other stuff going on. It's a great service. There'll be soup and supper and other things, right? It's the beginning of that Holy Week, that whole, so come, even if you don't want to, but there's an invitation to do so. Because that need to clear that space, that need to open ourselves up to understanding the radicality of God's grace, I think is part of the spiritual journey. So I'm going to show a video here about God's grace. I'll show a video here of the prodigal son. I was talking, it's a YouTube clip. Low production values, cheap props. Some guy and his dad and their best friend, you know, obviously got together and they're home and decided they're going to do a video. I was talking with a friend of mine recently about YouTube, and she was like, I love YouTube. I love the democracy of it, that anybody can create a video and post it online for anybody else to see. And it doesn't have to be well done, and it's all its quirkiness and, you know, imperfection. It's there for everybody to see, but it's the freedom of it. Like, she was celebrating the freedom of this. So we get to participate in some of that. Somebody and his dad decided to do this, and so we get to watch it this morning. Because despite its low production value, despite the cheap props, it has heart.
What are you doing?
Not here. I don't know where I'm going to go, but I gotta go, man.
When you try your best, but you don't succeed. When you get what you want, but not what you need. When you feel so tired, but you can't sleep. Stuck in reverse. And the tears come streaming. Sweet.